go suck a fat one.
I have an addiction to smut. I'm right-handed, but my ball sack is left-sided. Get the B-Man a double cheeseburger. Take the tip and shut up. Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 75 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. the B-Man, the People's Degenerate. We're going to get after it today. I am hyped up. God bless America. I love the United States of America, all 50 states and Washington, D.C. I'm not sure how that works. Anyways, if they're going to fuck us over, and the United States government does, and specifically Big Pharma. Big Pharma fucks us over, so let's fuck them over together. And let me tell you how I did that. We all know Big Pharma, they're in bed with Congress, both sides, left, right. They all make money together while making us all sick and not actually improving our health, even though we have to spend millions and trillions of dollars for all these medications and procedures and surgeries. Yesterday morning, I went to go see my neurologist, who I see twice a year. My brain is okay. He prescribes me an antidepressant, though, Cymbalta. I take 330 milligram pills per day. I'm disclosing a lot of information to all you viewers, but I love you all, so that's why I'm doing so. But he's the one who prescribes me this medication, so I need to continue to see him so that I can keep getting the drugs. But recently, I got an email. Actually, last week, I got this email from my employer. Companies try to make it seem like they're doing us a favor, like they're working on their employees' behalf. This email, inflation is 9%, but we're only going to increase your out-of-pocket health care benefits by 2.5%. So you're actually saving money. But it's like, no, fuck you. You know you're raising our out-of-pocket healthcare costs, our benefits to get those. You're raising how much you're taking out of our paycheck every biweekly. So I was very frustrated with this email, and I know it's coming because it happens every year. If you're an employee and you work for a large corporation, they're going to increase your healthcare costs out of pocket while giving you fewer benefits. Amazing how that happens for everyone, every employee in the United States who works for a corporation. So I had this in mind. Then yesterday morning, I'm in my doctor's office, and you know, he comes in, we're doing, you know, he's giving me normal tests. Hey, how's everything going? How have your symptoms? How have they progressed? Are you feeling any better? Are you exercising? You're running? You're doing yoga, which I do all the time. And normal conversation. He asked me, hey, you still taking Cymbalta? Yes, I am. Are you still taking vitamins? Yes, I am. And at the very end of the appointment, which I was only in there for maybe 10 minutes, he goes, oh, is there anything else I can help you with? And it just kind of, in that moment, is there anything else I can help you with? Well, actually, the answer is no. But then it just stuck in my head. It's like, wait, I'm paying more for my health care in 2025, so I'm going to get mine. I'm going to get something out of this money. Like, I am somebody, as soon as I hit my deductible, I treat my healthcare plan like an all-inclusive resort. I literally, once I hit my deductible, I become a salesperson. I will cold call doctors that are in network, and I'll ask them, what's the most expensive test you can give me? I want it, and I want it twice. Like, literally, hey, how much is that rare blood thing that you can test? Yeah, yeah. Take a vial of it, okay? Take a vial of my blood, suck it out of me, send it to Germany to get tested, and charge it to Aetna's credit card. That's what I love to do. Aetna, you're going to fuck me over? I'm going to fuck you harder. So that's what I did. I was in that office. My doctor, I won't say his name. I'm sure he doesn't want to be associated with this, but he's like, is there anything else I can do for you? And in that moment, it hit me. I go, yeah, can you prescribe me Cialis? It just popped in my head. I've been thinking about trying HGH and TRT, but for some reason, I just said Cialis. And you guys know I talk about Mr. Perfect, knock on wood. 40 years old, I've never had problems getting erections. I still get morning wood, like so hard that even like, oh man, my penis is a little sore from being so hard from that morning wood. I don't have much sex, but whenever I do, I've never had problems getting hard, working, even with some brutal potatoes, mashed potatoes, the most grotesque looking women. Mr. Perfect, he's a soldier. He rises to the occasion every time and he goes into battle. Anyways, so I asked the doctor, hey, can you prescribe me Cialis? And he goes, oh, do you want like when you need it or do you want it like daily? And I said, well, I want it daily. And I go, can I have 5 milligrams of Cialis per day? And he looked at me, he didn't do any test on my private area. He didn't. The only thing he asked me, he goes, do you have any heart conditions? Again, my doctor, neurologist, he did not do any heart tests on me. He just asked me. He was like the honor system. And I go, no heart condition at all. I exercise every time my heartbeat, I test it. It's great. And he goes, all right, daily or you know, he was kind of in his head. He was thinking. He goes, all right, I'll give you a daily prescription. How about a 2.5 milligrams per day? And I go, deal. All right, I'll take it. And I got a 30-day prescription of Cialis, 2.5 milligrams for free. My insurance plan had to pay for it, and I'm not using it. I'm going to start collecting Cialis, and I'm going to become a street dealer of the dick pills. There are plenty of comic friends I know who have just destroyed their mind with dirty porn. And they have, it's amazing how many comics I know in their early 20s who cannot get hard with like a real woman. And because I'm 40 years old, so I know people who are starting to get a little soft because of AIDS. So I'm probably not going to sell them. I'll just give them away for free. So if you're a fan of Verbal Graffiti and you live in Connecticut, I'm not going to mail these Cialis dick pills out to you. But if I can come to you or you can come to me, I have the pills because I'm really not going to use them because I'm not having sex or anything right now. So, yeah, I'm man. Thank you, American healthcare system. All right, you're making me pay all these thousands of dollars for healthcare. I'm getting my dick pills from you, and I'm getting them in abundance. And I'm going to give them away to everybody, all my friends who need them, because I care about the health of Americans. I care about my friends and their dicks and their love life and their lovers who love their dicks during lovemaking. And I'm getting it all from Aetna. So thank you very much. And I advise you all do the same. Every time you go to a doctor, just ask for a prescription of something you don't need. Maybe that's what families do. At least that's what my family does. Whenever somebody gets sick or pain, we start calling each other and messaging, like, hey, do you have any pain medication? And I'm not talking about fentanyl. I'm just, you know, like meloxicam or ibuprofen or any, nothing narcotics. Just, you know, prescription, but nothing that's going to make you addicted. We'll just start passing around pills. Like, yeah, I got this pain medication. I got this thing for heartburn. I got this this nose spray that helps with migraine headaches. It's a merry-go-round of medications. And when you come from a big family, it was some of people in my family work in the medical field. So, well, hey, is this going to fuck up that drug I'm taking? And we're American, so we're all on drugs. That's what we do. I advise you all go out and do this. Next time you have a doctor's appointment, ask for a prescription of something, you know, you don't need, but that might be useful in the future. So you know, get yours. Get yours. If they're big pharma and Congress and the government are in bed together to make trillions of dollars, well, fucking let's pull from the tree and get a little something for us, for me, for you, for you know, the peons on the ground who are not in the big suites up top. God bless America. God bless big pharma. Let's extract all the pills we can get from them. And again, I'm not talking about narcotics. I don't want anybody here getting on fentanyl or, you know, serious drugs that can kill you. But the fun pills, the dick pills, you know, the extra strength Tylenol, things like that. Fucking, dude, they're going to charge you like $1,000 for 2 Tylenol at a hospital, at the emergency room. You bet your ass that I'm going to get something for my doctor for a very small prescription fee when I go to the Walgreens. Love America. Love America. You fuck me over, I'm getting mine. Ooh, baby, my bandana's sticking out. All right, all right. Moving along. We're getting it towards the holidays. Halloween is coming up. Typical American, skipping all the holidays, going straight to Christmas. This one involves Thanksgiving. From the subreddit, Party Planning. Thanksgiving dinner. We are hosting Thanksgiving for the first time this year. We have about 20 people attending. Our dining table seats 8, so we will have to get a couple folding tables. Okay, that makes sense. I am wanting to invest in a nice set of dinnerware. Would I purchase 8 place settings for each seat at the table or 20 place settings for each person? God bless America. Your mind, unlike mine, is focused on all the wrong elements of Thanksgiving and being the host for your Thanksgiving dinner. See, you need to re-examine, take another look at the syllabus. You're focusing too much on the miscellaneous tasks that only equate 20% of your grade. What you're missing, what you need to focus on is what is 80% of the grade. And what's 80% of the grade is the food and football. Everything else is a small percentage of the entire grade. So let's focus on the miscellaneous tasks which you brought up in your post, which is the place settings and the dinnerware set. Nobody gives a flying fuck about what spoon they use at Thanksgiving. Have you ever been Monday after Thanksgiving? Have you ever gone back to the office, gone back to work, wherever that is, back to school, and heard anybody talk about the fork and the spoon and the knife that they used at their aunt's house or their grandparents' house on Thanksgiving dinner? No, because nobody cares. Nobody cares. If you're having 20 people over, nobody's going to expect you to have like a sterling silver butter knife, like 20 of them for each guest. Like everybody knows, like that's asking too much of any family member. So like you could steal silverware from Buckingham Palace or one of those kingdoms over in Europe, and chances are 75% of the people at your Thanksgiving dinner would not even recognize that this is that the fork they're using is coming from royalty. Point is, let's go to Goodwill. Go to Goodwill. It's amazing what you should get at Goodwill. You could probably get enough forks and spoons and knives and all the whole silverware and the place settings for under $30 for the entire Thanksgiving dinner, all 20 people. This is a good example, and I'm not just bullshitting here. This table, this chair, all of this, I got this all from Goodwill. All from Goodwill. Probably this chair, all this combined, I probably spent under $30. I think the chair was $20. The table might have been $15. So maybe under the light might have been like $3. Yeah, so for definitely under $50, I got almost an entire like podcast scene. So Thanksgiving there, just go to Goodwill, forks there, you know, a dime a dozen. So that's what you do. Once you do that, we got to focus on the 80%, which I'm worried about that you are not focusing on, the turkey and football. So you want to have the meal at halftime of the 1 o'clock, or sorry, is it the 12 o'clock or 1 o'clock? I think the football game starts at noon. It depends on what time zone you're in. But whenever Detroit, because Detroit plays the day game, you want Thanksgiving dinner to be at halftime of that game so you don't piss off all the football fans at your party. If you have 20 people, there are going to at least be a few football fans in attendance. And you want to appease what they like, and what they like is football. So take all the money you were going to spend on that silverware and use it to buy a big 55-inch minimum Sony flat-screen TV. If you don't have one, go out, spend the money on that. Forget about the silverware. And what you need to do is just focus on making a good turkey, because if your turkey is dry, you will have to take shit from your relatives, maybe for eternity, like at least the next year or two. People are going to be talking shit behind your back about how dry your turkey was. So do a practice run the week before. Get whatever kind of turkey you're going to, however you're going to do it, do a pregame. Cook it the week before so you learn from your mistakes, and it's better when you know, at the main event, Thanksgiving dinner, Thanksgiving day. And you also need to manage the party. You got 20 people, all right? You got 20 people. You have 8 people at the adult table, 12 people at the children table. You need to make a list of who's gonna keep a vendetta against you for the longest for sticking them at the child table. Because that's who you want at the adult table. Are the people, the family members who says nothing's ever enough. Like, put those people at the adult table, because they're just going to make your life miserable going forward if they're stuck next to Billy picking his nose and flicking peas into his mashed potatoes. So, and also, when you're doing the seating arrangement, every family's got some weirdos. Me, I got misophonia. I could never eat dinner next to my dad or my mom because of their chewing. So you gotta know that there are family members who are like angry at each other. So you gotta spread them apart like it's a boxing match. So you gotta know, hey, who's not talking to each other anymore? Who's close? Who's not? And just try to, it's almost like a wedding where you kind of have to separate all the parties that might start popping off about politics or religion or about, you know, a family member who's a little slutty than maybe everybody likes. Yeah, every family's got some drama, so just keep them all separated. That's probably the main thing. And you got to know going in that you're probably going to have a sister who's going to point out every flaw. Like, it's as soon as she gets in the house, 11 a.m. Thanksgiving morning, she's going to tell you you need more air in your front tire that's on your car in the driveway. And Aunt Patty, she's going to be hovering over you during the whole day while you're trying to do the cooking, while you're stirring the gravy. Aunt Patty's going to be looking over your shoulder, seeing if you put enough stock in the gravy, and like, hey, did you put enough stock? And you got to be aware of that going in. So you just look at Aunt Patty and go, hey, Aunt Patty, back the fuck up and let me control the kitchen. Remember what happened last year when we had Thanksgiving at your house and you tried deep frying a turkey for the first time ever and you almost burnt down the entire living room? Yeah, none of us forgot. So get back to the living room and let me stir this gravy by my lonesome. You got to know that going in, that there's going to be aggravation, and all the to all the alcoholics that are going to be at this party, you know, there's always one on call. Just make sure, allow him to drink, but don't allow him to have more than 2 pints per hour, just so that he doesn't, you know, during Thanksgiving dinner, admit that he's a, you know, a cross-dresser, and maybe that might upset your grandmother, who's a little bit more conservative in her ways, or maybe your cousin Victoria, she gets a little sloth, gets a little too much of the sauce, and she admits that her children aren't her husband's and that she had a dalliance with the FedEx driver. And, you know, that might pop off a whole nother, that might ruin. And, you know, when you have somebody, when a father at Thanksgiving dinner finds out that his children aren't paternally his, that will ruin a Thanksgiving dinner. So let's be aware of how much everyone's drinking and try to manage their consumption during, you know, one of the great American holidays. God bless America. Thanksgiving. Let's go look at some photos. Episode 75, segment 2. Please share an episode, a segment, a little clip of Verbal Graffiti to all your busty, loose Latina friends or acquaintances who have a loose vagina. All right, keep your head in the game, Brian. Focus. I don't smoke. I've brought this topic up quite a bit here at Verbal Graffiti. The extent of my smoking is occasionally learn how to speak. I will take a hit of a doobie that's being passed around after a comedy show out back. And again, I'm not really inhaling much. I don't get high very often. So often I'm driving to do comedy and I do not want to be high while I'm driving home because who knows what would happen if I did that. But again, I get peer pressured and I want to make everyone feel comfortable because I'm a people pleaser. Please like me, everybody. So I'll just take a little hit, pass it around. And occasionally during the summer, I will take a puff of a Black and Mild cigar if I'm by a campfire with the boys. But that's it. That's all I'm smoking all time. And so I don't carry a lighter with me, but I do feel a kinship with cigarette smokers. So since I do hang outside venues a lot, I do get that question quite often from smokers who will come up like, hey B-Man, do you have a light? And I always have to say no. And I'm like, no, but that guy who was just at the bar, he smoked, so I think he might have one. Or, hey, that guy who's walking down the street. Or, hey, wait, I got a comic friend in the other room. Let me see. There's always, I can't help out my fellow man. You know, even though I don't smoke, I don't judge smokers for their habit because I know like, it looks cool. Smoking a cig or a joint or a doobie or whatever, you know, that, especially if you're young and beautiful or mysterious looking, I don't judge you for doing that. And I am starting to reflect on all the times I've said, no, sorry, I don't have a light. And it kind of makes me, it does. I'm not living up to the standard in which I want to live. Like, I want to be able to help out my fellow man, especially those who are addicted to substances that stimulate them. So now I have this internal conflict. It's not if it's a conflict, but I've been debating with myself recently. Should I start carrying a lighter? Even though I don't smoke. It's always nice to have a, you know, you never know when you get stuck and maybe you do need a lighter. So maybe even for safety purposes or survival purposes. The reason why I've never really fucked with lighters is I do have a cousin who died in a house fire. He was a 3-year-old, lit his room on fire. Somehow he was locked in. He was playing with a lighter. So ever since then, like no one in my family, we've never been a family that has a lot of lighters and no smokers either. So I've just never really fucked with the lighter. And now the more I'm thinking about, I've been pondering, you know, should I change? You know, I don't like having things in my pocket. And a lighter would have to be another, even a little tiny one, would have to be another thing I'd have to stuff in my pockets. Because I know the fad fashion now is to wear loose-fitting pants and clothing. I still like wearing tight pants. I feel as though, no, I do know. For me personally, tight pants are more comfortable than loose-fitting pants. Because loose-fitting pants, I have to keep pulling up. Tight-fitting pants, they just stay at my waist, and I don't have to worry about them sagging down. But so I always put my wallet and my phone in my back pockets. I don't like having anything in my front pockets. Maybe the most I have is my key. But maybe I should start carrying a lighter so that when someone asks me for a light, when I'm just hanging outside a venue, yeah, here you go. And if they steal it from me, it's like, fuck it, I don't smoke. I don't need that anyway. The more I delve into this topic of lighting cigarettes and assisting my other people that may smoke who don't have a light, which is like if you smoke a cigarette, why are there so many cigarette smokers who don't have a lighter with them? It is amazing how many times I will see a smoker ask me, hey, do you have a light? It's like, no, but I don't smoke. Like, I shouldn't have a light. You should have a light. You're the one who needs it. All the time. I prefer matches. That's where I'm going with this. There is a lighter. It's convenient. It lasts longer. Matches are more personal, though. A match, it's more, it's vintage. The striking sound, it's more pronounced than a lighter is. You got that striking noise. You have the flame. And since it's only for a little bit, you got to protect it with your other hand. And you know the flame's going to go out soon. So you kind of have to hold it at the very top of your cigarette or whatever it is, your doobie or whatever. So it is... It's you're more at one with your ancestors when you're using a match as opposed to a lighter, which I don't know when lighters became a thing in the world. Again, I'm not a smoker, so why would I know? But yeah, I think there's something about lighting a match, that sound. You see the flame build up, and you know you only have a little bit before it starts to fizzle out. And that quick moment, and you can kind of smell whatever that spark that makes the flame, that smell, it's a more soothing smell from the match that you... A match gives you a more smoothing smell in your nostrils than the liquid lighter fluid of a lighter. Or so maybe I'm wrong. I'm not a cigarette smoker. So those of you who smoke cigarettes, agree, disagree. Is the match, is it more natural? Is it more personal? Is it more... in touch with nature than a lighter with the lighter fluid? Let me know. Is that, or is it just a convenience of a lighter? Does that outweigh everything you get from a match? Let the B-Man know down in the comments. And again, if you have any busty Latina people, females that you know, babes, let them know about Verbal Graffiti and the B-Man. All right, let's move it along. This last one for episode 75 comes from the subreddit Stripper. Let's see where the stripper's going with this one. Are strip clubs the new bars? Sometimes I feel like customers just don't know what a strip club is. We had a wave of about 10 guys come in all from the bar, just there to kill time, just left the golf club and blah, blah, blah. They were there for about 2 hours. All of us went up to them little by little and no dances. Then another guy came in and the same. And after that, another guy came in wanting lap dance, but to throw singles, not pay for each song. Then later it was football game crowd and don't bother them. They have football fantasy bets, and they need to pay attention to the game. I'm keeping it positive. Good days will come. Thanks, emoji. Now, my question is, when did strip clubs become hangouts only? Bambi, what I want you to do is go back to the strip club locker room and take a good hard look at yourself in the cracked mirror with that ripped photo of your daughter that's in the left-hand corner of that mirror. And take a good hard look at yourself and who you are as a stripper. And really ask yourself, is it the guys? Is it their fault for not getting the dances? Or is it you? Because I think it's the latter. Such an American way to blame others. Oh, it's their fault. It's their reason why I'm not making any money in this shit. Maybe it's your fault. Let's examine this first group. They come in, a group of 10 guys from the golf course, straight from the golf course. They take their glove off. They take off their cleats, put on their sneakers, throw the clubs in the back of their Corvette, and they sprint right over to see you, the titty bar. And these guys have money. They are the definition of money at strip club. 10 guys wearing the golf attire. You know they just dropped a couple hundred dollars on 18 holes. They could definitely drop $50 for a 3-minute Lil Wayne or whatever song as you shake your booty on their Gucci area. That's on you. Now, what you got to do as a stripper, you have to understand the game. Now, I, the B-man, I am not a strip club guy. I've only been there when I've been drunk with friends at bachelor parties and a couple of dates, like one-on-one date that I brought to a strip club. Other than that, I am not a strip club guy. It makes me feel uncomfortable. So maybe I'm talking out of school, out of pocket with this one. But that's the game. You go in with a group of guys where it's golf guys, playing 18 holes together, or a bachelor party, or a bunch of dudes coming in to watch football. Like, that is the opening shot of this chess match that is the strip club. Is the guys come in, me, my boys, the guys, we come in, we say, yeah, we're not here for a dance. We're here to throw down some bills, watch TV, hang out, drink. We don't want anything. That is the opening sequence. That's our opening line as the Johns. And eventually, this is what happens if you're worth your stilettos at this strip club. Is eventually, your boy to your left, the guy, you did boot camp with him. You did two tours in Iraq with him. You survived shrapnel together. Eventually, that guy is being, you turn your left, he's gone. You're like, where the hell did my guy go? He's gone. Nowhere else. You don't know where he's at. And it's dark. The lights are strobing. So you don't know where he is. And before you know it, you spend 20 minutes trying to figure out where he is. Then you turn around and all your other friends, they're gone too. Like, you see one of them, you see his back. He's holding the hand. There's some stripper who may or may not be the product of human trafficking. We don't know. We don't ask questions. Her English, not the best. So she probably is a product of human trafficking. But she's leading him to the back room, the champagne room, to do some lap dances. And before you know it, it's the Johns at the strip club. The lights come on. It's closing time. And all of us, we came in together. But now that the lights are on, closing time, we all don't know where each other is. We're all in a different corner, dark hole in this strip club. Somebody's called the Uber. And we're all furiously texting and calling each other. Like, hey, we got to get outside right now. The Uber's leaving. He's not waiting for anybody. It's already 2:30. You got to get your ass out here right now. That's how every strip club I've been to with the boys, that's how it works. We go in as a tight-knit group. And then by closing time, you strippers, you break us down. You break us down one song after the next, one twirl of the hair, one laugh, tease, conversation, and eventually we buy dances and we stuff $20 bills in your G-string. That's the game. That is the game. We go in there strong-minded, but we're men, so we're weak in the legs, and you just beat us down slowly by slowly till we throw our morals away and you know, give you all our money. That's how strip clubs work. So if that's not happening to you, that's an indictment of you as a stripper. Now, I want to point out something you said. You said the last group that came in were guys watching football. And these guys, those are the easiest Johns to get their money. That's the guy who's lost all his bets on Sunday. And he's going to the strip club and he's throwing down money. He's chasing his bets on the Sunday night game. The last woman he saw was his wife that he bid farewell to 12 hours ago. He's lost all his money. He's there. He's chasing his bets. And you're the first lady he's seen in hours. It seems like days. And you're not able to break him down to get a $40 lap dance from him. It's time for you to take a knee and give your titties a pep talk. Like, if you can't get that Sunday night football, if you can't get that John to the back room to give you money for a lap dance, it's time for you to hang up the stilettos. Because that's the easiest John. That guy, that John should be giving you at least 3 bills and should be paying for your drinks for the entire Sunday night football game. I've never seen a photo of you, but I'm just imagining you have a C-section scar, you have a muffin top, you probably have a faded tattoo down your spine of a cross with a snake going around it, and you probably have so many piercings on your face that it would make a TSA agent just quit on the spot, because like, I don't want to deal with that much metal. And she just quits on the spot. You don't have the looks. You don't have the mentality. You do not have the toughness, the internal fortitude to be a successful stripper, to make a living twirling on the pole. You need to find a new way to make money. You're not made out to be a stripper. This is not the John's fault. This is your fault. Continuing on, reading A Salesman's Wife by John Lawrence, published date 1977. And again, just to preface, we are pro-consent still in some of the, you know, I'm not going to judge. It's literature. So the author, you know, let's just read along, shall we? We're on page 17. We're going to read 2 pages together. If you're reading along, page 17, top of the page. His mind was so clouded with anger and sexual frustration that he was unable to comprehend the brutality or coarseness of his actions. Hypnotically, he placed his middle finger at the tiny entrance of the tight nether hole. At once, Pamela knew what he wanted in his unbalanced state, and her body rocked with fear. This was the most degrading thing she could conceive. It was impossible, yet it was happening with her own husband. Alan, she cried. No! But at that moment, Alan plunged his finger into the tense orifice with iron cruelty. Ah! She screamed as the burning pain shot through her thumb-spread buttocks. It was too much to endure. She had never known such torture. Stop! Stop! She cried. But these tortured shrieks only excited her husband even more and drove him into a frenzy of lurid passion. He jammed his middle finger in further, widening the tight passage, forcing entry as Pamela screamed in terror and pain. Stinging shafts of burning flames seemed to shoot through her body. She desperately tried to get away, clutching at the bed covers, but Alan held her firmly by his hips. Finally, he removed his finger from her aching, throbbing anal passage and pulled her hips upwards towards him into a kneeling position so that she had to balance herself on her elbows with her buttocks waving lewdly and helplessly in the air. She tried again to struggle and escape, but Alan gripped her firmly, his fingers dinging harshly into the soft, cringing flesh of her hips. She moaned, overcome with humiliation, pleading him to stop, but he was deaf to her cries. He knelt behind her, his body arching obscenely like a conquering warrior, his thick, swollen penis throbbing with excitement. He quickly pulled back the velvety foreskin and placed the charred, rubbery head at the anal entrance after moistening it slightly with spittle. It was poised like an iron spear, ready to plunge into the heart of its helpless victim. "Alan, I beg you," she screamed. "I beg you." "Bitch, bitch," he growled, and with sudden anger, he shoved forward. The tight anal muscles refused to give at first, and he felt his thick cock bend slightly, but he shoved again, harder, and this time the head of his lust bloated cock forced its way up into the tight, virginal passage with such force that it sent Pamela's body thrusting forward in agony. "Oh, no!" she cried, as her rectal crevice was consumed with sharp, searing pain, like a lead bullet shooting forward up her back. The thought of the inhumane act filled her with shame and loathing. She was humiliated, like a beaten captive kneeling in shame before her conqueror, but her conqueror was her own husband. Go suck a fat one.